Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a podcast from the Smart Material Collective. Made by nerds, funded by the listeners.
Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? I'm your host, Oz Ismail.
This episode is a very special episode. First, because it's a Pride special. And also, it's a crossover!
Crossover!
That's right. This is actually a crossover episode with the coming out tapes. So my co-host slash guest today is the amazing Keris Bradley, who you may remember from episode 11 back in 2018.
Such a long time ago. We've ages. Moved from a tiny basement to an incredibly hot
roof.
Yeah. Up so many stairs.
We've moved up.
Yeah.
Directionally. So, Keris, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners and also tell us about the coming out tapes?
I'm Keris. I am a freelance science communicator and researcher. So, I wear many hats. I am currently working on a research project with the charity Gallup, looking at the impact of transphobia on the trans community. I'm also a stand-up comedian. I'm taking a show to the Edinburgh Fringe this year with comedian Rachel Wheely, which is called The Unfortunate Bisexual, titled by Oz.
You're welcome.
Which is all about bisexuality. And I do lots of work in schools talking and teaching about the dark web, which is my research, PhD research sort of topic, but also about like LGBT history and that kind of thing.
Nice.
And the Coming Out Tapes, that was the other thing that you asked me, is a podcast that I run, which is an audio archive of LGBT stories. For every episode in the first series, I sat down with an interesting, wonderful, amazing person from the LGBT community and asked them about how they came out, how they chose the language to describe themselves, and what their experience has been. So the first ever episode was with Oz. That's how we kicked off the entire show. And I'm currently working really hard on season two. So that's exciting.
Excellent. So the reason we decided to do this crossover special episode...
It's a crossover!
What is this? A crossover episode?
You know, that gets funnier every time.
You're being sarcastic, but I think it does actually get funnier every time.
Which we won't keep saying. It's because being excessively gay is very on brand for both of us.
Excessively bi.
Excessively bi and gay. If I claimed to be bi, I'd be lying. Very on brand. Being excessively... off the rainbow.
Yes.
And also, we've just had Pride Month. So Keris and I went to UK Black Pride at the weekend and we met some amazing, amazing people.
So we spent the day like literally running around with a pair of microphones and a press pass and using that as an excuse to talk to people who looked incredibly cool and interesting, but also people that we like follow on Twitter.
Yeah,
we met just so many total heroes. Stalkers. Yeah.
So here's a selection of people we spoke to.
You know, I think Pride has so many different meanings. And for me, Pride is political because our beings are political. Pride is also a protest. Pride is also a celebration. But Pride is also a place where people find their home, where people find their tribe, where they find their community or their communities. And they've just got like a shared commonality with people around them. My name's Lady Phil. I'm the co-founder and executive director of UK Black Pride.
And can you just tell us, as I know you're very busy, but how did this project start?
Okay, so in 2004, I was running an organization for black lesbian women in the UK called Block. And I took them to Southend, and we recognized that actually we want to claim our space. And in 2005, we started UK Black Pride. We had some challenges. It wasn't easy. And there was a lot of resistance to setting up Black Pride. But we've just gone from strength to strength, and you know, 14 years on, we're here now in our new home, Haggerston Park. Yeah, we've hopefully we'll see about 8,000 people join us.
Amazing. And what does pride mean to you?
Pride is just taking pride in who you are, being who you are, whether you are trans, non-binary, gender neutral, whether you're a lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, you know, it's just about coming with your whole true self. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us what pride means to you?
Pride is freedom. It's expressing who you are without being judged. It means coming home. That's what pride means to me.
Pride means being bold, being you, unequivocally.
Well, I know there are lots of different opinions for the pride, but for me, it's like really empowering, encouraging.
I think, to me, pride is about not diminishing yourself and not shrinking yourself in whatever form that means for you. Pride doesn't necessarily mean you have to be loud. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be flamboyant. Pride is about being like, I exist and I exist loudly, and that loudness can be seem quiet, but for me that's loud, and I think that's what pride is.
I especially want to chat to you, Keris, because you have a lot of information. I've been to a lot of your shows, and you have a lot of knowledge and information about LGBTQ plus people, especially what science thinks about us, right?
Yes. So this is one of my pet projects. I do a lot of sort of historical research into scientific research on the LGBT community. So that's looking at things like what kind of scientific research has been done on what rights the community should have. So should we be allowed to raise children? But also sort of how homosexuality came to be, but also about like the medicalization of people of the community. Specifically looking at same-sex couples, because that's kind of been a research focus for like the majority of the time. And there are like other kinds of ways that science can study the LGBT community in this context. For example, looking at bisexual parents who are in a differing sex couple, but science hasn't really bothered about that.
Right.
Or you could look at what happens when one of your parents comes out as trans, for example. But that's sort of... that's maybe a newer concern that society has, which is not to say that, you know, society hasn't discriminated against trans people in the past, but like that's something that people are more violently opposed to now. So the kind of most of the research that I've looked at has been science looking at same-sex couples and the implications that has for children. So interestingly, this kind of research sort of began in the 70s with actually like lesbian and women, other women who love women researchers who wanted to have families but were aware that they didn't have the kind of support and information available to them that the more like classical nuclear family had. So there weren't any parenting books, or at the time there weren't any parenting books targeted towards two women raising a child together, and how you might want to go about doing that. Because there are obviously things that you have to consider, like how you can explain to your children, like if they're being bullied at school, why the relationship that you have is okay. Like that's something that might be very difficult for people to do.
Right.
And it would be really helpful if they had literature that they could both read but also could give to their children. So this kind of research really started with those parents trying to make informed decisions in order to advise other people. But it then kind of got hijacked by people who were worried that it would be damaging to children if they were raised in this kind of environment with two dads or two mums, or, you know, two mums and a dad, or some other kind of like combination, anything that wasn't that classic nuclear family. And they were concerned that it might make kids gay, or it might affect their perception of their gender. They were worried that it would be damaging for these kids because they weren't growing up in a stable household. They were worried that people from the community were just, you know, perverts and shouldn't be around children. So they had like all of these different concerns. And there were scientists out there who were like actively trying to prove using data that that was true.
So what is it, this notion that people want to hijack science, it's annoying because it sounds like there are people who genuinely want to do real good science and be helpful to our community that needs this information and help. But the hijacking of science to serve a different purpose or agenda is constantly happening, right, to any marginalized group. Especially recently, we've seen this transphobic letter that's gone around that is trying to say that the existence of trans people is up for scientific debate, which really angers me and annoys me, because I do love science, but at the same time, I don't think everything is up for scientific debate. But people seem to want to keep hijacking it in the name of science.
Yeah, I think that like a major problem with a lot of this research is that it's conducted by humans. And I say that with the implication that there's like an alternative. That's not what I mean. But like,
aliens have been researching us.
So scientists are, you know, human beings who are impacted by the the structural discrimination that shapes the world that we live in. So I think it is impossible for any scientist to consider themselves immune to the signaling that we get from like the media and the world around us that kind of promotes this idea of having a husband and a wife raising children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very difficult for you to decouple those kind of subconscious biases when you step into a lab. And so a lot of the literature that I've read, what happens is that people bring their subconscious prejudices with them. And that has a massive impact on the kind of hypothesis, the research questions that they want to answer and the hypotheses that they like formulate. So when you do science, the process that lots of people follow is that you read the existing literature to find out, you know, what questions haven't been answered. You work out questions that you think you could be able to answer in order to fill in those gaps. And then based on your experience and your reading of the literature, you come up with these hypotheses, which are your sort of best guess answers to those questions. And then you test whether or not those answers are true. And if you are operating with this perception, like if you believe that, you know, that that gay men are more promiscuous or bisexual men are more promiscuous than straight men, because that's the signaling that you've been given from the way that these people are portrayed in the media, then you might make the hypothesis that because they're more promiscuous, that's more damaging, it creates a more damaging environment to raise children in. And you've made like there's a bunch of us, I keep saying you, not you, this hypothetical scientist has made a bunch of assumptions there, like the idea that a promiscuous parent is a bad parent. That's something that we like are raised to believe because of our perceptions of monogamy being preferable to polyamory and things like that. But then also, this like you've taken this stereotype from the world outside and you've brought it into the lab. And so when we talk about like scientific debates, not only is it dehumanizing to the individuals to say, oh, we're going to debate today, we think it's up to debate for debate today whether or not like a trans identity is a legitimate identity, or whether or not someone should have the right to like raise their biological children or adopted children or whatever, but also I think that there is this perception that science is very objective, but we forget that like the kinds of questions that we both ask and answer heavily informed by the world around us. And so it's really, really difficult to do this kind of science in an environment which is so prejudiced against the participants that you're researching.
Yeah. So do you know, like, of the research that's being done on, say, the parenting aspect, how many researchers do we know
who are involved in this are actually within, from the LGBTQ plus community?
So I did, when I was doing this research, I like basically I would read a paper and then I would take the name of the researcher and be like, this person, gay, Google search. it's not a great way of doing it. And I did really struggle. And I think, you know, that's fair. Like, I don't want to presume that all of these people are cisgendered and straight. And I don't think that people within the community have a responsibility to, like, be out, because, I mean, we're both scientists and members of the LGBT community, and we know that in lots of places it's not safe for you to be
right
out at work.
Exactly.
So I couldn't tell you that. I feel like I should be at least able to tell you, you know, what proportion, because not all of these papers are like negative papers. Some people have actively tried to show that not only are same-sex couples good at raising kids, but in lots of ways you might consider them to be better than your like conventional heteronormative kind of household. I couldn't even tell you what like proportion that is, which like I wish I had the numbers, but...
Yeah, it's hard to find this out, isn't it? But I guess ultimately it's important... What we're saying is it's important for people from the community to be involved in that research too.
Yeah, I think so. Kind of changing context slightly, but I think a really good example of this is quite an early paper on the potential of there being a gay gene. So that's like a big hot topic at the moment because, you know, they think they've found it. And all of this research started like, you know, a couple of decades ago. And one of the first papers was written by a scientist who he was on holiday with his family and they'd gone to San Francisco and he was walking along the beach and he sort of noticed that there was like the beach that he was on, there seemed to be quite a lot of what he thought was gay men. And he found out from a friend that that particular beach was actually a hotspot for men from the community to go and hang out. And he had just read a paper that showed that the direction that your hair turns from the like spot in the middle of your hair, mm-hmm. head, your hair whirl is called, the direction that that's turned turns is correlates with whether or not you're right-handed or left-handed.
Okay.
And whether or not you're right-handed or left-handed, that's a genetically determined
right
thing. And so that implies that the direction that your hair turns also genetically linked. So he went to this beach and he sat down and he like basically made a note of the direction that the hair was turning on all of these men in this beach. And what he found was that to a statistically significant level, their hair turned in the opposite direction to the general public. And so that was sort of like an indication to scientists who were studying genetics at the time that actually your sexuality could be genetically determined. But that was purely based on him going to this beach and looking at these men and being like, I think that you are gay, in brackets, or bisexual, and so I'm including you in my study. So like, it's purely based on stereotypes of the community. And I think that, you know, if he had maybe had friends who hung on out on that beach, they might have said, like, not all of those men are going to be gay and bisexual. We have friends who are straight. And they're like, so the sample that you've drawn is like not actually a sample that we might consider scientifically rigorous.
Right.
But if you don't have anything to do with the community and you've been told, you know, we move in packs and we keep to ourselves, then like maybe you would think that that sample is like a good sample. And there are lots of, like, a lot of these papers, there are similar kind of, I read a paper written by someone who I would be very, very surprised if they have strong ties to the community because of the way that they talk about that community. But then I have read lots of papers where people talk about how, so at the moment for the project that I'm doing, I'm looking at the impacts of transphobia on the trans community. So I spend most days reading about transphobic hate crime. It is not fun.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh.
But there are a lot of studies that have been done in this area where like the researchers have made really sure that it's like led by the community for the community. And so they bring researchers from the trans community in right at the beginning to help create the like methodology that they're going to use. And so that like there are scientists out there who either are from the community or are aware at least that they have that knowledge gap. And so they take steps to kind of fill it by hearing voices from the community. And then there are ones where they clearly just have not done that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
2017 survey found that 49% of people in the UK think that we are born with our sexuality.
Entonces, ¿por qué existen las personas gays?
Homosexuality has been a small but distinct...
L'homosexualità dipende dalla genetica.
What we know is that there is no one gay gene.
Yeah. Science is really obsessed with this idea of, like, what is homosexuality and why does it exist? And I think a large part of that comes from this kind of very Darwin perspective of survival of the fittest and the fact that homosexuality is kind of in antithesis to this. So I'm just going to, like, I don't know, paraphrase something that I heard on another great podcast called Witch Please, where they were talking about the, like, potential asexuality of Voldemort, the character of Voldemort in Harry Potter. And there's an entire, like, school of academic thought which looks at where discrimination against asexuals come from, and this idea that society is really disgusted by people who reject the desire for reproduction. And so, like, one of the kind of, like, foundations of homophobia but also acephobia comes from this idea that we very much see our species through this, like, evolutionary lens where what we're trying to do is reproduce, and wanting to have sex and wanting to create children is therefore, like, a very like, it's a very natural desire. And any person who either doesn't have that desire for reproduction, like women, for example, who don't want to have kids, or doesn't have that desire for sex, like the asexual community, or wants to have any kind of sex which is not for reproductive purposes. So large parts of the LGBT community, and then also to a certain extent people from, like, the kink community. One of the reasons why lots of people in society find those concepts really disgusting is because it seems to be in tension with this idea that we're all supposed to be, like, furthering the species. And so when science asks the question, like, what makes homosexuality, like, why are some people gay, I don't think that that's, like, an innocent question that is just curious about why the world is the way that it is. I think it's driven by this desire to understand the things that seem wrong or out of place. So homosexuality doesn't fit in with that theory, so we have to come up with some kind of caveat or footnote to understand, like, how we've ended up in this way. And there are lots and lots of different kind of theories. So there's this hypothesis called the gay uncle hypothesis, which is this idea that so it comes from evolutionary theory, and it's this idea that if in your kind of community, so if you're, let's say that you're like a woman in like a pack group, and you have a brother, and that brother is gay, then they don't have the desire to reproduce, which means that they don't want to eradicate your children from the community because they're not going to have kids who are fighting for your kids' resources. So what you get is a male ally who is genetically linked to your children and therefore feels connected to them and wants to protect them, but isn't producing competitors for your kids. So if there is a gay gene which is carried through women in the family, then it makes sense that gay uncle would be beneficial to that sister's children, and so they would be more likely to survive, and they would carry on the gay gene which the mother has and the gay uncle has, but she passes it on to her children, is the idea.
Wow.
So that's one kind of school of thought, which is trying to explain how we have homosexuality within this evolutionary kind of.
And is that theory. Just hypothesis driven, or have people actively gone out to do the research?
Yeah. So this is linked to the search for the gay gene and early studies where people made these massive family trees, where they would get male participants within their study who identified as gay or bisexual, and then they would interview and construct these huge family trees, and they would try to find instances of homosexuality within the family tree. And then they were able to show that you have a disproportionate number of men who are identifying as gay on your mother's side of the family tree. And that's one of the clues about whether or not it is genetic and how it works, which has ultimately led to people claiming that they have found this gay gene.
Wow.
So that's kind of one side of it. And then the other side of it is all of the... So you've got all of these theories that kind of explain how that gay gene would survive without this desire to reproduce. And then the kind of other strand of this kind of research is really looking at homosexuality being some kind of something's gone wrong. So you're not meant to be gay, but then something about your environment in... the way that you're created either as a fetus or as a child means that you are not actually you're not correct. So there's these theories that so there's some data which suggests that you're more likely to be gay if you have lots of older brothers. And the theory is that your mother has used up all of her testosterone supplies on your older brothers in the womb. And so she doesn't have enough to give you in the womb. And so that you don't develop fully into a man, you're not a man in the same way that the rest of your brothers are men. You're a gay man because you don't have the same levels of testosterone. And then there's also, so the flip side of that is that gay women have more testosterone than the average woman. And so that is about the reason why we're the way that we are is because there's something wrong with us. That's the kind of implication of, and that's, so the reason why I really dislike this kind of science is because that premise is really harmful to the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. But then also it's entirely reliant on the stereotypes that we have of the community. So when a lot of people imagine a lesbian, they imagine a butch lesbian. Right. And they just ignore all of the femme lesbians who exist. And that does have an effect on the way that the science is done. If a scientist is deciding who is gay and who is not gay, and therefore who they include in their study and who not to include in their study, and they're doing that based on stereotypes, then you see... then you end up skewing your samples to prove the hypotheses that you have created. And there's obviously, there's nothing wrong with being a butch lesbian, but that's not the only lesbian experience.
Right. It's not representative of the community or the subsection of the community you're trying to study.
Yeah, exactly. And it means that you end up supporting all of these kind of damaging ideas. So you then get to claim that a woman is a lesbian because she developed incorrectly. Mm. And that meant that she was closer to being a man, which is ridiculous because a butch woman who identifies as a woman is a woman.
Yeah.
And regardless of her levels of testosterone. And it also means that you get really, really obvious massive harms, like the treatment of Caster Semenya.
Possible fallouts from a legal hearing involving Olympic champion Caster Semenya. Semenya is not transgender, but some believe she's so dominant because of a condition she has called differences in sexual development. That means she has naturally higher levels of testosterone.
So Caster Semenya is a South African Olympic athlete, and in 2009 she was stopped from competing because she outperformed several other athletes, and they made her go through several tests to verify her sex, and she was stopped from competing. And there have been multiple sort of rulings on female athletes and what testosterone levels they're allowed to have, and I think there was also a requirement for her to take medication to reduce her testosterone levels, which is insane.
Yeah. And it's all tied to this idea that, like, our hormones determine our gender or our sex, and both of those concepts are scientific concepts that are not matched by, like, people's real world experiences.
Mm. But I also feel like with her case, it's an interesting case where the fact that she's a woman and the fact that she's a black woman all kind of played into it, especially on social media.
Yeah, she's also very proudly gay.
Yeah. And all of these things, just like, it's difficult to, as much as people want to be like, this is not about race or this is not about sex, it clearly was a mix of all those things that kind of put her in that position.
Yeah. And it's having implications for, like, so Caster Semenya is not trans, but lots of people, like, refer to her as if she is. And they're, like, in this political climate, which is extremely transphobic, lots of trans athletes are being bullied and attacked for wanting to compete, with people saying that, like, they have this unfair advantage because people don't understand, or that they're, like, making presumptions on how being trans would age you as an athlete. And there's, like, a lot of misconceptions and ignorance. So people say that Caster Semenya shouldn't be able to compete because of the level of her testosterone levels. And for that same reason, they don't want trans women to be able to compete in women's categories, even though trans women actually have a lower average testosterone level than cis women, often because they are taking the hormones that they want to take in order to, like, change their body if and when they choose to change their body.
Yeah.
And so there's kind of, like, these incredibly, like, new ideas that we're now imposing on people because they are better than our sports players at doing the sports that they're really, really good at. And we end up, like, putting people through these really humiliating tests and talking about them in these really dehumanizing ways. And I think that, like, those things have not occurred in isolation. All of these things are linked. Like, the fact that we have these kind of, like, scientific schools of thought that link our sexuality to our hormone levels, and our gender to our hormone levels. Like, you literally can't win, right? You can be a cisgender woman and your hormones are the wrong levels, and you can be a trans woman and your hormones are the right levels, but neither of you are allowed to compete.
The world is just awful.
Video only.
No, it's just audio.
Mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name is Mohammad Naziruddin. I'm from Bangladesh, where homosexuals are prohibited, and I am open gay Asian Muslim. And whenever I say I'm gay, open gay, I feel proud. I feel relieved, and I'm thankful to God to. Each of single day, I'm thankful to God to give me this unique sexual orientation.
So why did you come to Black Pride today?
Because it is my first time in the UK. I'm attending so many Pride. And I came here because it is an opportunity for me to stand out and say what I am and who I am.
How are you finding Black Pride?
Yeah, it is very colorful and very, very, it's like festive mood. one of the everyone is colored, and yeah, it's very lovely.
And what does pride mean to you?
Pride is like a protest for me, where I can express myself as an open gay man. I can work to shoulder to shoulder with my community, and I can openly came out on the street with my LGBT community.
Okay, so the ideas that we have in science, based on like who we are sort of all based around procreation. And this is interesting because this is where a lot of the old British like colonial laws that still exist in a lot of countries, so Section 377 came from. So for those of you who aren't aware, Section 377 is this old British law that was imposed on the British Raj. So that includes current day India, Pakistan and Bangladesh. And it was based on Christian Victorian morals, and they did not like the idea that relationships could exist without a person being produced as a result of that relationship. So they introduced this law that said that any kind of sexual activity that didn't result in creating a child was illegal. But then turns out pretty difficult to police the type of sex that people are having. So they decided, well, we'll just be okay with straight people. And it just eventually evolved into a gay or homophobic law that in some countries still exists. And it was not just in the British Raj. It then expanded onto all other countries that were being colonized. And this is the law that still exists in a lot of countries. And the reason I brought this up is because if you look at sort of texts that exist, like these old texts that exist in that part of the world, there's evidence for LGBTQ plus people existing. There's evidence for men who had relationships or romances with other men, lesbian relationships, and in fact, trans people, or like people who are not gender conforming or swapping gender because that was how they identified. But it was only after the British came in and were like, no, this is not okay, and imposed this law, that people then started to conform to what was seen as normal within quotation marks. And that over years and years and years just then, you know, manifested as homophobia.
And I don't know as much about the formation of these laws as you know about these specific homophobic laws, but in a lot of countries, if you want to transition, you have to agree to be sterilized before you can legally transition. So wow. Even if you don't want to have any kind of surgery, you just want to change your gender on your like birth certificate or passport, then you have to be sterilized, which is an invasive procedure that is being imposed on people because of the perceptions that we have of like what it means to be a particular gender identity. And I don't know if it has the same kind of root as the colonial laws that you talk about, but it seems very likely to me that this is also linked to this idea of like procreation, but specifically like good procreation. And we don't want certain people to be able to procreate.
Yeah.
And we can actively restrict their ability to do that.
Hmm.
So there's lots of ways that we police the LGBT community are tied up in this kind of ideals.
Homosexuality is a heinous, horrible thing.
It's not acceptable
in Islam. God created man, and then he created woman for man's pleasure and for his companionship. He did not create man for man. I mean, that is a disgusting act.
But it's all right for your children to sit around the table and talk about gay lesbians openly. That's fine. That's within your Christian opportunity. But with us, we don't accept it. We don't accept it.
We cannot trust the...
Yeah, so it's interesting because currently there's a lot of hoo-ha in Birmingham about the No Outsiders Project. So this is, I believe it's a head teacher in Birmingham who proposed sort of inclusive stories, I think it was, to teach kids about the diversity of relationships. And I think it also includes like religion and all of that as well. And a lot of parents in Birmingham were very upset about it, especially a large population, the South Asian Muslim population, were unhappy about it because they felt like it was inappropriate, age inappropriate, and also didn't sit well with their religious beliefs. And for me, I found this very painful to watch as somebody who is gay and from a Muslim background, because first of all, the fact that we already, like, the Muslim community already has a bad, like, image because the media always portrays us as terrorists. So the moment this sort of thing happens, the haters jump onto it and be like, look, these people are not aligned with our values, which makes me think, well, first of all,
your values. Yeah.
Exactly. Second of all, it's like it erases the fact that the Muslim community are saying this does not line up with our values. Erases the fact that Muslim LGBTQ plus people exist, regardless of whether you want to believe they do or not. They 100% do. And it's just not cool to just turn a blind eye to them and be like, well, you, to us, you don't exist, right? And also, I think it's very painful for people to see that, because particularly for people from specific religious or cultural backgrounds, when you come out, I'm not saying that some people's coming out is especially more difficult. Coming out is a very difficult process, but when you have all these other barriers to break through as well, it makes it a lot more challenging. Like, from a personal point of view, I felt like I was turning my back on my culture, my religion, coming into this new community, and shockingly wasn't accepted into it with open arms. So there are all these other things, that, like barriers you have to face when you come out as a person of colour or as a person of a certain faith, right?
So do you want to tell us who you are?
Yes, my name is Alex Leon. I work for the Kaleidoscope Trust, but I'm also an activist, writer, campaigner, all those things. Oh, someone's put something in my pocket. Oh, someone's just put some condoms in my pocket. Happy UK Black Pride, eh? Anyway, yes, so that's me.
I'm going to pretend asking who you are, because I know who you are, because I've been following you on Twitter.
I'm very, very flattered, Oz. I'm very flattered.
So tell us what brought you to Black Pride today.
So UK Black Pride is always my favourite day of the year. I think it's kind of like QPOC Christmas. And the reason is I love Pride of London. I think Pride of London is a really important event. But what I really appreciate about UK Black Pride is that I get to kind of celebrate every single aspect of who I am, right? Not that I can't do that at Pride in London, but this is a safe space for me to express myself however I want. And it's also a lot of fun. Like, it's just, it's community.
A thing that is interesting to me about this kind of conversation about Birmingham is that there's like this implication, because there is this vocal community who is against this education, that like everyone from similar communities believes the same thing. So I do a lot of work in schools, going into schools, talking to kids about my experience as a member of the community, and then they get an opportunity to ask me questions. And these children are like often 15, 16 years old, 13 years old. I will be the first non-binary person that they've met who's like open and out about that. For some of these kids, I might be the first, you know, member of the LGBT community in any sense that they've met who is out about their sexuality or gender identity. And understandably, like, given the way that they are able to consume knowledge about the community, they have a lot of questions. And I think it's really important that they get given kind of a safe space where they can ask lots of questions, so that they don't go up to a random, you know, gender non-conforming person on the street and ask them a bunch of stuff or similar. And I have been really lucky. I work with a couple of charities, and also this is, you know, part of my freelance stuff. And I've gone to lots of different schools, and I've always had like a safe space to do that. That doesn't mean that the kids don't ask difficult questions, but it's never been something that I felt was like personally attacking me. But something that I have noticed is that a lot of teachers who are white will say things like, yeah, we have a big Muslim population here, so we weren't sure how it was going to go. Like, you're just already presuming,
right,
that these kids,
yeah,
are going to have a problem with me because of their cultural background and their,
wow,
religion, which is not something that they would say about their white students, they're talking about their whole school, but then they're signalling out this group. But I was recently in Bradford for the Bradford Literary Festival.
Okay.
And so this is a festival that is held in Bradford every year. It's been a bit controversial this year because they've received some funding from the government, which has, in other projects, been used in, like, quite an invasive way to kind of police Muslim spaces. And so they came under controversy for receiving this funding. I still went up to the festival, and I'm like just saying this as kind of like a caveat. I still went up to the festival because I was really excited to go into some schools and talk to some kids. And also because, you know, I'm a freelancer on a budget and they'd promised me like this money to do this. And I kind of wanted to pick up that paycheck because I'd done the work for it. And then also because the project is like I really believe in the Bradford Literature Festival project. The people who run it are fantastic. And I think that they, you know, they acknowledge the criticisms from their community and they explain their position, and they've said a lot of stuff online, which made it like the decision, I felt the right decision for me was to go to the festival, even though other people like have pulled out. But I went to a school in Bradford and I did a lecture on the history of LGBT rights and then a couple of workshops on the discrimination the LGBT community faces. Firstly, it's the first school that I've ever been to where I've been gendered correctly when I've been introduced.
Wow.
I did not say to the teacher what my pronouns were. The teacher had been told by the festival organisers and he just introduced me correctly. That was fantastic. And the kids, like, I mean, I spoke to like 200 children, so it was really variable in terms of what they wanted to talk about and what they knew about the community. But it was not variable based on like racialized communities. Mm-hmm. There were like kids who were really, really knowledgeable on this stuff and they really wanted to help stop homophobic bullying in their schools, and they were getting support from teachers to do that. And then there were lots of kids who, this was the kind of the first time they were being introduced to those concepts, and the school was making a real effort. And they have been criticized by community groups. So I was told by a parent that there's like a lobby, which is a combination of some conservative Muslim groups and some conservative Christian groups and an anti-abortionist lobby. Wow. So the communities who are protesting this kind of education, it's not just the Muslim community, but those are the only ones who are kind of like getting the press.
Right.
And when the work that I have actually done in schools does not make me feel as if there is a specific community who is resistant towards this. So like even this conversation, it's built on, within the media, it's built on the preconceived kind of prejudices that we already have.
Totally. Yeah. I just feel like, yeah, it makes a better story, and it just like feels more hate, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, and it makes it really difficult for LGBT Muslims.
Hello, my name is Hafsa Qureshi. I'm Stonewall's Viral Model of the Year 2019, and I'm at UK Black Pride 2019.
Amazing. How are you finding Black Pride?
I'm loving it so much. It's so nice to be with other queer people of colour. I feel like I don't have to explain who I am. I wear a hijab and I don't have to explain that I'm queer because everyone is just in the same space, feeling the same thing, feeling the love. It's amazing.
Is this your first Black Pride?
This is my first Black Pride and it's amazing.
And what does Pride mean to you?
Pride to me means celebrating where we've come from. It also means knowing that it is a protest and we're still fighting for our rights. But I think it's also a chance to just get together and build a community, because so many of us are isolated in our pockets where we can't be queer, we can't be who we are. And this is a celebration of where we've come from. And it gives us a chance to pool our resources together and create more protests, fight for our rights as much as we can.
And if people like you are like looking for your community or they want to support the work that you're doing, how can they get in touch with you or get involved?
They can contact me. My DMs are open on Twitter. Oh God, don't DM me anything weird. But it's at Ms. Hafsa Qureshi. So it's MSHAFSAQURESHI. But if you're Muslim and queer, there's the London Queer Muslims who are also on Twitter. There's Hidayah, there's Iman LGBTQ, Stonewall are really friendly. So do check out those organizations.
Brilliant, thank you so much.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride!
You may have noticed that, like, every major corporation and their mum had a pride banner up in mm-hmm. their window.
Rainbows everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And I was getting kind of frustrated this year because it wasn't clear to me what these organizations were doing to back up their, like, pride participation. And so I started a spreadsheet. Because what else are you supposed to do when you're
such angry? A nerd?
So I started a spreadsheet where, like, basically every time I've seen a company or one of the people who's helped me with this project has seen a company which has had, like, a Pride logo or Pride merchandise, I've looked at, you know, how much money they've actually donated to LGBT causes, what do they do for the LGBT community outside of Pride Month, that kind of thing. But then also looking at, like, things that they do which are contrary to the LGBT community. And I posted this spreadsheet and I got a couple of comments from people saying that a lot of the negative things that I put in were like irrelevant. So including when a company had been racist or including when a company had exploited its workers, either in this country or a different one. And people were saying that, like, that doesn't have anything to do with what that company is doing for the LGBT community, as if the LGBT community doesn't intersect with loads of other marginalized communities. And I think that because of, you know, like, racism and ableism and classism within the community itself, like, these problems that we have, we often end up portraying members of the community as, like, typically cis, gay, white, able-bodied middle-class men. Mm. And that allows a lot of people to kind of, like, ignore all of the other kind of identities that you get. But as a community, we intersect with all of these other communities. There are so many other kinds of experiences. And when you have that, what that means is that those people who are representatives of other communities, as well as being a part of the LGBT community, within the community itself end up being stereotyped for the cross sections of their identity and also held accountable for the actions of the rest of their community. So people who are LGBT and also people of color, when they talk about coming out, are often asked, like, oh, was it difficult to come out to your parents? Because the thing that is not said is it must have been because your parents are from an Asian background or because your parents are like Afro-Caribbean. And so then as an individual, you're put in this position where, like, if your parents were terrible and, like, did not accept you, then by admitting that, by, like, being true to what happened, you are forced to participate in that racism and you're forced to participate in the stereotyping of those people. Or you have to find yourself defending homophobia or transphobia.
Yeah.
Just as, like, if you are from a working class background and people expect you, my example is that, my dad's family is quite middle class. My mum's family is from, like, a working class Welsh community, and I came out to both. My parents came out to both sides of my family on my behalf at the same time, basically. And my dad's side of the family were like, oh, how did your mum's side of the family take it? The implication being there that, like, because they're working class, they would have rejected it. But that's not what happened. But you're, like, put in this position. So I was able to say, no, they were obviously very accepting. But even by answering that question, you're, like, tacitly, like, implicitly acknowledging that that is a question worth asking.
Yeah.
And that's a way that, like, I think that people who have intersecting identities within our community, like, are forced to pick sides all the time.
Totally,
which is just exhausting.
Totally relatable and exhausting. It is true. And also, on top of that, like, I do feel that a lot. When I get asked that question, and also you're fighting, then you have another thing to fight against what you're already fighting, which is, I just don't feel like I belong here, and I feel like I've turned my back on something that was very much part of me. And for that reason, I've never really felt comfortable in, especially when I first came out, comfortable in gay spaces, and I never used to go to Pride because of this reason.
So what brings you to Black Pride today?
This is my first Black Pride. I live in Hackney, and Hackney's very inclusive, open. And I thought, why not? I went to Pride yesterday. I was like, why not come to Black Pride and like see what it's like, experience it, and do the whole shebang. So I wanted to just try it out.
Amazing. And what does Pride mean to you?
Pride to me means like people that naturally don't come out and embrace being themselves in the community, coming out for, even if it's just one day, coming out in the community, being themselves and feeling inspired to be whatever they want to be, like naturally every day. So Pride is like, it's like a 24-hour moment to feel what it's like, to not care about like societal rules, barriers, being in a closet, just being you, and hopefully feeling inspired to be you, like how many days they are like in a year, like all of that.
Well, Keris, that's all we've got time for. We've come to the end of our Pride episode.
It's a crossover.
It's a crossover. So if you want to hear more of these wonderful people that we met at UK Black Pride of the weekend, head on over to the Coming Out Tapes when Keris...
Oh, dear. So I promise I am working on this. So I think the first episode for Series 2, which will be the Black Pride special, is going to come out September.
Do you want to say goodbye? Do you have any plugs to do before we go?
When's this coming out?
Whenever I can get Alex to edit it.
Okay. If this is coming out before August and you are Edinburgh-based, come and see mine and Rachel's show, The Unfortunate Bisexual, at The Street, 9 o'clock every night of the week, except for Mondays and Saturday the 17th of Edinburgh.
Excellent. And remind everyone where they can find you.
And follow me on Twitter at #Keris. You can now also follow me on Instagram, also at #Keris, if you want to see like pictures of my girlfriend and I failing to do puzzles. That's basically what it is.
Sounds like an excellent account. I've been Ozzy Smile. I've been joined by the wonderful Keris Bradley. This has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, so we are at Black Pride.
We are.
Because it's a crossover.
It's a crossover. It's a Coming Out Tapes, Why Not a Doc crossover.
Why aren't you on Coming Out Tapes?
Why
yet?
Aren't you? Which is the new show.
You're the worst person. Thank you.
Are you just recording yourself?
Well, we're just recording ourselves. Yeah, we're really... We're recording a podcast.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, sorry. As if that like makes it any better.
Yeah. A podcast is just like, you know, we're like the definition of trash basic millennials. We both have our podcasts and we're just recording ourselves in a park. But sadly, it's time for us to say goodbye. I've been Ozzy Smile. I've been joined by the wonderful Keris Bradley. This has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Goodbye.
Wonderful. What, Bradley?
What did I say?
You said Keris.
I'm sorry, I have a cold. Okay, I'll do that again. I'm sorry, Alex. Sadly, that's all we've got time for. I'm Ozzy Smile. No, f***ing sake. I did this once before when I was in Portland when I had to record the same thing about 5 million times.
You've got it. I believe in you.
And Alex is blatantly going to put this as like a... blooper at the end. Yeah. He's done that before.
Well, now that you've said it, he has to.
Well, if I say it, he can't do it, can he? Because then it's like unnatural.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.